I stopped dead. "You're in love with him yourself," she said. "It only needed that." And then she burst into choking sobs and buried her head in the pillow to stifle the noise. "Oh, shut up," I said. She mopped up a bit, then said, "Cassandra, I swear by everything I hold sacred that I'd give him up if I thought he'd marry you instead. He just thinks of you as a little girl." "What he thinks of me has nothing to do with it," I said. "It's him I'm thinking of now, not me. You're not going to marry him without loving him." She said, "Don't you know he'd rather have me that way than not at all?" I had never thought of that, but when she said it, I saw that it was true. It made me hate her more than ever. I started to tear the dress off. "That's right, come to bed," she said. "Let's put the light out and talk things over quietly. Perhaps you only fancy you're in love with him. Couldn't it be what's called calf love, darling? Let's talk. Let's try to help each other. Come to bed." "I'm not coming to bed," I said, kicking the dress away. "I'm going home." "But you can't. Not tonight. There are no trains." "Then I'll sit in the station waiting room till the morning."
"But why?"
"I'm not going to lie down beside you."
"Cassandra, please listen."
I told her to shut up or she would rouse the flat. She had one more try at getting round me.
"Cassandra, I beg you to stay. If you knew how wretched I am."
"Oh, go and sit in your bathroom and count your peach-coloured towels," I sneered at her. "They'll cheer you up, you lying, grasping little cheat." Then I went out, controlling myself enough to shut the door quietly. Just as I got to the front door, I heard a faint whimper. Eloise, I'd completely forgotten her. The next moment she was there in the dark with me, thumping her tail. She had her collar on and I used my belt as a leash. I remembered that there is a corner house restaurant close to Piccadilly and that Topaz had once told me it keeps open all night. So along we went. It was such a grand place that I was afraid they might not let Eloise in, but we chose a moment when the man on the door was interested in something else. I ordered tea, and it was a comfort, and by that time I more than needed comfort. Most of me ached with tiredness, and my eyes felt as if they had been open for years. But worse than that, worse even than my misery over Simon, which I was more or less used to, was the gradual realization that I had been utterly in the wrong with Rose. I saw that the main reason for my outburst hadn't been noble anxiety about Simon's happiness, but sheer, blazing jealousy. And what could be more unjust than to help her to get engaged and then turn on her for it? How right she had been in accusing me of failing her. What made me feel worst of all was that I knew in my heart that she was fonder of me than of anyone in the world, just as I was of her, until I fell in love with Simon. But she shouldn't have said that about calf love. How dare she? I thought. Who's she to decide that what I feel is calf love, which is funny, instead of first love, which is beautiful? Why, she's never been in love at all herself. I went over and over it all while I drank cup after cup of tea. The waitress put the bill down on the table and I felt I had better go. I opened my bag to get out a tip for the waitress and then... All my life I shall remember it. My purse wasn't in my bag. I hunted frantically but without any hope, because I knew that purse was still in the evening bag Rose had lent me. I felt icy cold and sick. And then it dawned on me that it wasn't only for my bill that I needed money. How was I to get to the station without a taxi? And my railway ticket, that was in the purse too. I've got to get help, I thought desperately. But how? There were call boxes in the front part of the restaurant, but apart from feeling I would rather die than telephone the flat, I knew it would involve Rose in impossible explanations. Then I suddenly remembered Stephen's message that he was always at my service. But could I bring myself to wake the Fox Cottons up at nearly 2 in the morning? I was still arguing with myself when the waitress came back and looked at me very pointedly, so I felt I had to do something. I got up, leaving my bill lying on the table. "I'm waiting for someone who's late. I'll have to telephone," I said. I opened the book to find the Foxcotton's number, and then I remembered. You need pennies to telephone from a public call box. "You'll laugh at this one day," I told myself, and then I leaned against the call box wall and began to cry.